Live from the Canon Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Ask Governor Meyer. I'm Shirley Min. This evening is a chance for Delawareans to hear directly from their governor and to ask questions in real time. Our show is produced by WHYY and Delaware Public Media with editorial independence from the governor's office. We alone prepared the questions and topics, and our producers will be screening calls for clarity and relevance only. We welcome the diverse opinions of our audience. With me in our Philadelphia studio once again is Delaware Governor Matt Meyer. Welcome, Governor.
Good evening. Great to be here.
And we are also joined by two journalists who will add their questions to the mix. Sarah Mueller is the Delaware politics reporter at WHYY News, and Benta Boutier is Delaware Public Media's state politics reporter. So welcome to you both.
Thank you.
We're going to move through a series of topics this hour, and now is the time for audience members to join the conversation. You can call 888-477-9499. You can email askgovmeyer at whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, drop your comment in the chat. We would love to hear from you. Okay, Governor, the snowstorm that we had earlier this week, it was particularly tough for many people, but especially those struggling with homelessness. And then the organizations that serve those populations also had a tough time. So I want to start today with a listener comment. Martha, founder of the Milford Advocacy for the Homeless, wrote in to say, working people were out in this blizzard because they did not have a place to rest their heads. They work hard but cannot make enough of an income to be eligible for even the housing that's classified as affordable. If they are housed, they often have slumlords. How, Governor Meyer, are you going to address this issue with what kinds of programs and legislation?
Thank you, Shirley. First of all, with respect to the snowstorm, I think there are first responders, men and women out on snowplows for our Department of Transportation, utility workers in emergency room, you know, who went out during very dangerous times, both in the snowstorm we had at the end of January, the snow and ice storm, and then this snowstorm. So I think we need to pause and just say thank you to them. We had at the height about 80,000 80,000 electricity customers across our state who lost power. As of this morning, we had 61. Our roads made it through, got cleared in record time. So I just wanted to start with a little shout out to those who got up, worked many of them all night to serve all of us. And that includes people serving in Code Purple shelters. Mm-hmm. We activated Code Purple both with the storm 4 weeks ago and with this storm in an unusual way where we opened shelters up. We provided transportation so that people who did not have a home can get to safety. More broadly, with affordable housing and workforce housing, there is a major shortage of housing. The biggest crisis in housing affordability, certainly in my lifetime. There simply are Delaware is one of the only states on the Mid-Atlantic that's adding population. People want to be in Delaware. It's an affordable place to live. There's a high quality of life. That, of course, creates problems that there simply aren't enough housing units for the people that need them. And often, as is the case, those on the lowest end of the economic spectrum bear the brunt of the problem. This morning, we took specific action to address this. There's too much red tape in trying to build and renovate houses. If you think of someone who owns a home, if they want to put an addition onto their home, you hope that what they think about is the construction and making sure they have cost for construction and making sure it's safe. But the permitting requirements mm-hmm. are delaying some of these projects by years. We took a step today, signed an executive order in eliminating a lot of those permitting requirements, doing it in a way that is not harmful to the environment, not harmful to public safety. It's going to have a dramatic positive impact both on our ability to develop affordable workforce housing as well as energy projects, broadband. And with respect to housing, there are specifically priority projects mm-hmm. That are affordable and they will be streamlined to get through. I know in Milford, it's really tough right now.
Yeah, and I know we're going to dig deeper into that executive order today, but or later in the show. But, you know, in the meantime, there are a ton of people who are still suffering. I mean, they're strapped. And like we said, the shelters are strapped. So where do you start? Like, where do you think is a good starting point? Is it housing? Is it like focusing on jobs? Or is this just a multi-pronged, simultaneous thing we have to do?
I mean, you want to make sure people have not just jobs, but high quality incomes, incomes that enable them to work a little harder and make a little more. We're working round the clock to bring employers here to make sure the small businesses that exist have opportunities to grow and address the market. With respect to those who absolutely are in the most vulnerable place, as county executive a little more than five years ago now, I purchased one of the largest hotels in Delaware and turned it into the most comprehensive homeless shelter in Delaware history, the 192-room Hope Center. It's been an incredible success, a national model. Just last week, we started a bidding process to have similar shelters in Kent and Sussex County. So we're hoping that will address some of what's being seen in Milford and other communities.
Okay, before we move on to our next set of questions, I want to get Paul, who's on the phone. Paul from Townsend, you have a question for the governor?
Yes. The governor, you vocally stated that your office is a staunch First Amendment and anti-SLAPP proponent, yet the actions to correct highly illegal silver bullets enacted by elected and appointed officials have been that to ignore and deny abundantly documented state record. Just wondering, how does a victimized Delaware citizen receive supports from your office, Governor, to address these things that you vocally stated should not be taking place inside of our three counties?
Thank you, Paul. If you're referencing a SLAPP lawsuit that you think violates the law I signed last year, please contact my office right away. Contact an attorney or contact my office, matthew.meyer@delaware.gov.
Is Paul still on the line?
Thank you. I did contact your office, so I'll eagerly be awaiting the call back.
Okay. Thank you, Paul.
Okay. Hopefully, thanks for that call, Paul. All right. We're going to move on here. So this is, we're kind of talking quality of life crimes here in our next segment. There is a controversial ordinance that sought to address traffic safety issues that were associated with panhandling in Dover that failed last night. Sarah Mueller is going to ask the question.
There's been efforts by the state and some cities to crack down on vagrancy crimes like panhandling, loitering, sleeping outside over the past couple of years. Critics say it's an attempt to criminalize the homeless. Here's what Mike Brickner of the ACLU has to say.
This attempt to say, well, there has to be some way that we can throw these people in jail, or there has to be some way we can give them a ticket because their presence out in the community just really bothers me, continues to miss the point. Those solutions to this problem don't actually work.
What do you think of the Attorney General's draft legislation and other efforts across the state?
I do not think homelessness is a crime. Homelessness should not be a crime. Poverty should not be a crime. I think if we truly want to address the root causes of these problems, we need more beds in facilities like the Hope Center. We need to make sure the mental health, substance use, job training, housing placement services that are available in places like the Hope Center are readily available to those most in need across our state.
I think that Chief Justice Seitz, agrees with you that the state can't arrest itself out of this problem. But there are state lawmakers who say that their constituents are frustrated with seeing people on the traffic mediums asking for money or loitering in front of their businesses and stuff like that. How do you balance getting the resources that are needed to help people get out of poverty with the quality of life issues that are apparently, really affecting some lawmakers?
I believe in public safety, and I believe in executing the laws that exist on the books of our state. If someone is putting someone else at risk, whether that perpetrator has a home or does not have a home, that is a public safety concern we need to address. But if someone is living outside and doing anything they can to survive, I don't point at that person and say, that's your problem. I point at myself and our community and say, that's our problem. How do we solve this?
Okay, we're going to move on. So, affordable housing, a lack of affordable housing, is tied and very closely connected to the homelessness problem. And that is a big piece of this puzzle. Benta Boutier, what's your question?
Yeah, so getting back to, you signed earlier today a permit with the goal of making, you signed an executive order with the goal of making it easier to build affordable housing and other types of developments. But it sounds like a big part of that is greasing the wheels to make it easier to build affordable housing in the state. And I'm wondering what this will look like in practice. I was sort of looking at some of the housing and permits that had been, in funding that had been granted with the low-income housing tax credit applications, so, you know, building affordable housing for the state. And some of those were LLCs out of Maryland. Some of them are Delaware companies that were granted these permits, but I'm wondering how the state will make sure that developers in state have access to take advantage of these opportunities.
So we need housing in our state. The number I've generally heard is Housing Alliance of Delaware says we're short about 20,000 housing units today. That's going to grow pretty dramatically unless we change something into the future. What I'm saying to my team, back when I was at the County Insight, which has drugs that cure rare diseases, was interested in building a new building. And I told our land use team working on it that when you have a piece of paper, some filing for Insight, and you need it to be signed by someone or you need to go to run it by your supervisor, don't walk to them. You pick up that paper and you run to them, because if we add up all the seconds we save, they're literally developing drugs that are saving people's lives. So make sure we do it faster than ever. Similarly, what this executive order does is it says with certain priority projects, primarily affordable housing, but also some energy projects, some broadband projects, we want to make sure that we're cutting through any bureaucratic nonsense and we're moving expeditiously to develop sizable developments and to renovate homes. And quite frankly, the executive order does not differentiate between whether the applicant is based in Delaware or Maryland or anywhere else. The key is that they're building homes that will be affordable, and you can, you know, work as a nurse, a police officer, a teacher, a waiter, and afford these homes. That's what we're trying to do, and that's the goal of this executive order.
When we're talking about creating high-paying jobs, like having a sustainable economy for Delaware, doesn't it seem relevant to encouraging access for these businesses in state rather than a company in Texas or California?
Absolutely. And our Division of Small Business has a host of programs, including business loan programs, that give Delaware companies an advantage when it comes to programs like this. We don't want to exclude Maryland and other states' companies, in part because we don't want Maryland to do that to Delaware companies. We want Delaware developers to have opportunities in other states as well.
Has the red tape really been keeping us behind in terms of getting units built and even the energy, electric grid generation infrastructure issues? Has it been setting us back?
With respect to housing, it's not just a matter of the time delay of building, because time is cost. According to the home builders in Delaware, the cost of constructing a house today, the soft costs, the non-construction costs, the going through permitting costs, are about 30% of the cost of that home. So it's inflating. You can imagine they're not giving away that money. They're recouping it when they sell that home to you and me, when they sell it to the public. So there's significant costs. The home builders say that it often takes 4 years to get approvals, things that through this executive order, we're hoping to bring down to more like 12 or 18 months.
I have a question. I saw a press release recently about a development of, I believe it was 106, it was 106 mixed unit, where about 16 of the units were below market rates. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, that's about 15% of, you know, the apartments in that development. How can we accumulate, you know, the affordable housing that we need when, you know, we're only adding, you know, maybe 15, 20 units at a time?
Right. It's a fair question. We are encouraging mixed developments where some developments are market rate and others have price caps. I think it's good for the community when you don't put all the people looking for workforce or affordable housing in one neighborhood and people building, you know, larger market rate homes in another neighborhood. I think it's important to community and important to our schools and important to our infrastructure that we kind of put everybody as much as possible in within single neighbors. So we encourage that mixed. In terms of why aren't there more than 15%, there's a host of loan programs, low-income housing tax credit programs to try and increase those numbers. We this year increased the subsidy for those programs in my proposed budget, but it's currently pending through the State House and Senate.
Okay, Governor, we're going to take a break. Coming up in a few moments, we are going to talk about the Plummer Center. But in the meantime, we'd love to hear from you. Call 888-477-9499. You can also email your questions or comments to askgovmeyer@whyy.org. Or if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, just drop your comment in the chat. We will be right back with more Ask Governor Meyer.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
All right, welcome back to the show. You are listening to Ask Governor Meyer on WHYY and Delaware Public Media. I'm Shirley Min. Governor Matt Meyer is taking questions from WHYY's Sarah Mueller and Delaware Public Media's Ben Taboutier, and from you, our audience. So to add your voice to the conversation, call 888-477-9499, email askgovmeyer@whyy.org, and if you're watching on YouTube, on Facebook, you know what to do. You can leave a comment in the chat. Okay, so we're going to talk about the Plummer Center, and despite pleas to reconsider, the decision to close the Plummer Center is final. Sarah, why don't you take it from here?
Right, so the Plummer Center is slated to close next month, and you know there are Wilmington residents who are concerned about the end of the work release program there. Department of Correction Commissioner Tara Taylor said that, you know, the site could be an emergency shelter. It could be a place where people get behavioral health services, mental health services. It could be a market. Tony Dunn, a Wilmington resident, is a graduate of the Plummer Center, and he says he's concerned about it being sold to developers.
Gentrification is no joke in the city of Wilmington. We had a community over there, Riverside. They tore the whole black community down for poor people. These big developers are coming in here, destroying our families, destroying our livelihoods, all because of money.
So what do you want to see happen with the Plummer Center site?
I've instructed our Department of Corrections to work with Matt Heckles of the Delaware State Housing Authority and talk to the community. And we're working closely with Representative Chukwocha, who's the state rep for that area, to figure out the best use for the property. I also want to be clear that the rehabilitation and job training work that has gone on for years at the Plummer Center with many, many, many positive outcomes has not ended. In fact, it's our recidivism rates are lower than ever, which means the number of people that were coming out of places like the Plummer Center are recommitting crimes at a lower rate than ever. Public safety in our state and in that area where the Plummer Center is lower than it's been in a long, long time for violent crime. We're making progress. Prisons around this country are $100 billion industry. Only in my wildest dreams could I imagine that I'd be able to close a Department of Corrections facility and hopefully come to a point where we can reinvest that money in after-school programs and Boys and Girls Clubs and programs in the community that actually put people on the right path from the start rather than waiting till we're in rehab mode. But in terms of that, what's going to happen at that specific property, there will be a thoughtful, and we've started a thoughtful process that includes community. And I appreciate individuals like Tony Dunn who are out there advocating, saying, hey, don't destroy our community. This is an important fixture in our community. We understand now it's not going to have its current use, but let's do something that's still good for our community.
I mean, but Tony Dunn, who went through the program, has had success, and there were so many others who succeeded. But is there a question about why take something away that is clearly working?
There were 10 years ago, there were close to 300 residents at the Plummer Center. When we first started looking at this, they were down to about 40.
Mm-hmm.
And I think six had a job placement within the city of Wilmington. Now they're down to eight individuals. One has job placement in the city of Wilmington. Several of people who would have gone to Plummer Center instead have gone to Smyrna Work Release. And of them, I think not a single one is driving to the city of Wilmington. I think there are three that have job placements up along Kirkwood Highway and Newcastle County. It's the short answer is it's a different world. Okay. Many more individuals are in home confinement now. There's technology that enables us to do something that data shows gives people an even greater chance of success, which is when they're on level four, they go into their home environment directly rather than keeping people incarcerated.
So I know you were saying that those who are slated for a work release were in these work programs, they would be diverted. Some would be diverted to Smyrna. Some would be diverted to Georgetown. I mean, just from my perspective, it seems like it would be difficult for that to work. It's such a great distance for them to go.
You're assuming the fallacy is that people who don't have any data or information are saying everyone in Plummer Center is from Wilmington. They're working in Wilmington. And that's just not true. That's just not accurate. As I said, when I looked at this 5-6 months ago, initially, there were 40-some residents at the Plummer Center. Single-digit numbers were working in Wilmington, and a number of those were being released. There's efforts to make sure that people working in Wilmington have a home placement within Wilmington. And as I said, the most egregious cases come to my desk. This myth that people are living in Georgetown and taking 2-hour bus rides or whatever to the city of Wilmington to do their work is just not accurate.
Okay. We're going to revisit property reassessments now. So most states require periodic reassessments of property values. Delaware had not updated property taxes, though, for some 40 plus years until recently. And a big criticism is the uneven consequences, which Sarah is going to get into.
Spotlight Delaware analysis shows that poor communities in Wilmington were hit hardest by the recent property reassessments, Eastside, Hilltop, Southbridge. Why do you think that is?
I have not read the article or looked at the data. I don't know if that is. It's very easy to cherry pick and find individual properties in poor neighborhoods whose property taxes have gone up. I have not heard anything like that from the residents of the area. So until I look at the data, I'm not going to pass judgment on why something is. Let me say one more thing. If it is true, it's ironic because if I were sitting in this seat 7 years ago while we were getting sued at the county, all three counties requiring property reassessment, the city of Wilmington joined that suit against the county, saying poor people were being mistreated under that system and reassessment was the only thing that would fix the system. So if what you're saying, it actually is borne out by the data, it means the city government of Wilmington really had a lot to do with this overcharge of city of Wilmington residents. But I've heard a little bit about it. I have not read the article. Until I look at the data, I'm not going to pass judgment on it.
Well, Mayor John Carney suggested in the article that maybe Newcastle was using new builds to help boost tax revenue, that it wasn't bringing those properties back to the 1983 assessment levels, and instead were using them to add additional property tax revenue to their own coffers. Do you think that happened?
I do not think that happened, no.
I wanted to follow up. So we do have a statewide reassessment coming up in a few years, and I'm wondering how some of these county-specific responses to try to correct issues with property reassessment are going to be considered during the upcoming statewide one.
I'm not sure what you mean by statewide reassessment. Under state code, counties are responsible for the reassessment. When we were sued, and actually internally, not within the settlement itself, but I told my team that we were not signing off on a settlement unless there was some agreement or some law that required counties to do regular reassessment. What I did not want is, we clearly were in a rough place where politicians for years and years passed the buck and refused to do reassessment. I was sitting in a seat with my other county leaders where we were sued and we really had no choice. And I said, let's do the right thing and not only make sure we do this reassessment, but things are put in place so that reassessments are done regularly. So I believe the next reassessment is slated to happen in 2029.
Right. I guess I meant as some of the issues with I'm thinking about Senator Mansovinos's bill and things like this meant to bridge issues that have been seen in Newcastle County. What
is Senator Mansovinos's bill?
I'm looking at trying to sort of
maybe not off the, you don't have the bill off the top of your head.
I don't have the bill off the top of my head, but it's essentially giving counties the power to request information for outlying properties and the issues that these created in the property reassessment.
Subpoena information.
Yes,
subpoena information. I signed that in the law a few weeks ago. I think it's important that in reassessment is taxes. And it's important that the assessed value is accurate and based on accurate information. Today, as I sit here, there are still still properties, including some of the largest and most valuable properties in the state. Each month, I think I come here and I say the same thing, that until we get the actual assessed values right, when you have the Amazon Boxwood property, which sold for $392 million, I think in 2022, 4 years ago, and it's now assessed at under $100 million, that's lost revenue that needs to be made up somewhere. So I think it's really important, and it seemed to be more of a problem in Newcastle County than Kent and Sussex. I think it's really important right now that Newcastle County Assessment Office looks at those disparities, Sarah, what you said that I know was in a Spotlight article about poor black community, predominantly black communities, had unfair assessments basically under this that needs to be looked at by the assessment office of the county.
Okay. Well, the mayor said that they are going to be doing these interior reassessments, and
that's the city of Wilmington.
City of Wilmington.
Yeah, but in the first place,
and they would ask the county, Newcastle County, to take those into consideration. And I don't think that the county has necessarily committed to doing that yet. Do you think they should?
I think the county has an obligation. We have an obligation to make sure that when we charge you property taxes, the assessed value of your property is accurate. We said, a court told us 6 years ago that the 1983 values, you can't mark it back like that. That's not fair. It's unjust. And so now we've gone through this whole process, cost statewide tens of millions of dollars. We must make sure the assessed values are accurate. That is a county responsibility. County assessment offices should be handling that. It doesn't seem to be a problem in Kent or Sussex County. If a county thinks it can't handle it, we should revisit which level of government does it. But I appreciate what Mayor Carney is doing. I think what he's trying to do is get, and other leaders in the city of Wilmington, trying to get accurate information about properties that are not valued correctly and get it in front of the county assessment office.
Governor, I want to turn now to Wilmington, where debates have swirled over this prospect of resurrecting a 12-foot statue of Christopher Columbus that's been in storage since 2020. Italian-American residents say it represents their cultural heritage, but others are not fans of the idea. A listener wrote in to today's show to ask, and he writes, since you're looking to erect the statue of Christopher Columbus, will you be erecting a statue of Adolf Hitler? And I guess
I'm erecting a statue of Christopher Columbus.
He writes, since you're looking to erect the statue of Christopher Columbus.
That's not accurate. I believe that statue is owned by the city of Wilmington. So I have no dog in
I think the comment is tying into the Wilmington City Councilwoman Sinead Darby's comments when she had proposed not putting the statue up on public property, that she was okay with private property, but she had likened it to if you put up a statue of Christopher Columbus in a majority black city with his history, that it's basically going to a Jewish community and asking them to put up a statue of Hitler. So that was the context. Gotcha. And nothing else to add to.
Yeah, I don't know who I know very little about the dispute over the Christopher Columbus statue.
Okay. Well, Columbus isn't, let's broaden this topic. Columbus isn't the only major figure in American history to be called out for bad behavior in the past. Do you think there's something to be said about at least respecting all history and teaching about the past,
Absolutely.
Warts and all?
I think as a community, we need to be honest about our warts, about the ridiculous injustices, people who were killed because of the color of their skin, people who were outed and whose lives were really made difficult because of their sexual orientation and sexual identity. Women who were refused access to power for generations. I think it's really important we tell that honestly. To be frank, from our national government now, we're seeing an active attempt to whitewash history, literally whitewash history, to take resources from the African American History Museum, the Smithsonian, and take actions that fail to recognize some of the failures and real shortcomings of the vision of an America where everybody's free and everybody has an equal opportunity of success. So do I think it's important that we tell those histories accurately? Absolutely.
Okay. We are going to talk about a White House visit. Governor, you visited the White House just last week and you attended events organized by the National Governors Association. You and other governors from across the U.S. compared notes with federal leaders on policy issues and state and federal government relations. The visit also included a breakfast with President Trump. Sarah, what's your question?
I wanted to know what you and other governors discussed with members of the Trump administration. Did you have any asks that you made on behalf of Delaware?
Yes. So the National Governors Association each year has a business meeting with the president. Democratic and Republican governors are invited. And there's a dinner with the president at the White House. Democratic and Republican governors are invited. President Trump made it very clear that two of my colleagues, Governor Wes Moore of Maryland and Governor Jared Polis of Colorado, were not invited to the White House dinner. So I made it very clear, if they're not invited, I'm not going. And so we initially said we didn't think we were going to go to the business meeting. Actually, Governor Moore and Governor Polis both went to the business meeting, encouraged us to go. So I was one of, I think, 22 or 23 governors who attended. I had a constructive conversation with Secretary Duffy of the U.S. Department of Transportation. Newcastle County won a $22 million grant to connect Wilmington to Newport with an extraordinary bike trail that I think might end up being even better than the Markell Trail. Secretary, and they have not paid, the federal government has not sent the money yet. Secretary Duffy told me that he doesn't like bikes. I think his specific quote was, "I hate bikes."
Who hates
and
bikes?
And so I said, "You hate bikes?" He said, "Yeah." And so I'm not sure how we're going to get that funded. You know, there's additional things. President Trump said he's not going to go to any state where he's not wanted. He made that pledge to us. And we worked on a few other things around energy with what they're calling the Energy Dominance Council to move Delaware forward.
Okay, we hear the music. So in just a moment, we're going to ask Delaware Governor Matt Meyer about a subject we've gotten a lot of listener submissions about, the rising cost of energy. You also still have a chance to make your voice heard, 888-477-9499, or email askgovmeyer at whyy.org. We'll be right back. You're listening to Ask Governor Meyer on WHYY and Delaware Public Media. I'm Shirley Min. With me are reporters Ben Taboutier and Sarah Mueller, and of course, Delaware Governor Matt Meyer. If you have questions for the governor, send them to askgovmeyer at whyy.org or call 888-477-9499. Okay, building on a conversation about politics, Governor, I want to talk about the young Delawareans across the state who have been participating in protests. Benta?
Yeah, so on February 11th, Sussex County High School students walked out to protest immigration campaigns, and about 150 students were confirmed to participate in the walkout in Sussex County. And the school on Facebook did say that some of these students would face disciplinary action. And I'm wondering what you are anticipating or what you expect schools to how you expect students to respond to schools who, or how do you expect
the schools to respond to the students?
Yeah, schools mm-hmm. to respond to students making their voices heard.
Listen, I think as governor of the state of Delaware that students are out protesting, protesting the activities of the federal government in enforcing immigration law in a way that does not respect due process rights, basic due process rights, I think it's a good thing. I think people standing up and saying, hey, we need to fight for our rights, it's a good thing. The specifics of that school and the infraction that they believe the students violated, I don't know. I will say that as someone who's protested myself, part of protesting sometimes and protesting nonviolently is you break rules. And there are consequences for that. And that doesn't mean, in my view, you did the wrong thing, but you protested, you broke a rule, and you have to face the consequence. But my hat goes off to those students who are engaged in protest. If I were one of their teachers, I would be very proud that I'm helping to mold someone who's not just going to sit and say, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, to whatever they're instructed or told. This is a case where in those neighborhoods, particularly in Sussex County, there are specific instances of officers going often masked, not clearly identified, showing biased policing, listening to the language people speak, watching the clothes that they wear, the food that they eat, where they're standing, what they're doing, and arresting them for it. That should not happen in America. If it is, hats off to the students for standing up for all of us.
Governor, we have a caller on the line, Raphael in Sussex County. And Raphael actually participated in this school walkout. So let's take that call. Raphael, thank you so much for calling.
Hello, good evening, Governor. My name is Rafael Ferreira Juarez. I'm a senior at Sussex Central High School who helped co-organize the student walkout event at my school, and where many students come from immigrant or mixed status families. I'd like to ask, when immigration enforcement actions increase, it directly affects attendance, mental health, and academic performance. I'd like to know what concrete steps is your administration taking to ensure that students and communities like ours feel protected and supported so they can focus on learning? And as a follow-up question, given that immigration enforcement is largely federal, what authority does Delaware actually have to protect families at the state level? And are you willing to use that authority to prevent disruption in school communities like Sussex County?
Thank you, Raphael. First of all, thank you for organizing that protest. If you would, reach out to my office, because I would like to speak to the group of students who protested and let you know how important what you're doing is to our state. I also want you to know that what you're doing is working. I was at the White House last Friday, and the president gave a pledge to us that one thing he learned from Minneapolis and Maine and things going around the country is that he should not just be sending in federal troops to places where, quote unquote, they are not wanted. In terms of what we're doing here, we have put together an immigrants consortium. I'm looking for the phone number. I don't have it in front of me. Where we encourage anyone who sees ice activity, hears of ice activity, take whatever video you can take and get information to us. What I do for now is if you send me an email at matthew.meyer@delaware.gov, matthew.meyer@delaware.gov, I can send you the specific information. We're working on a video to disseminate information so people are aware. ICE is a failed organization. Their own data shows that less than 14% of those arrested in Trump's first year had violent criminal records, less than 14%. It doesn't take a math teacher to know that's a failing grade. Rafael, they're wreaking havoc on communities across this country, and we stand with you doing everything we can. The first step is getting information, making sure that our police agencies are acting within the law, not collaborating to do horrific things with these federal officers that are poorly trained and showing biased policing.
Rafael, did the governor answer your questions?
Yes, thank you very much, Governor. I really appreciate you recognizing that the students is essential.
Thank you, Rafael.
Okay, we're going to go to energy now, Governor. We've had so many questions about the exorbitant energy costs. Adam from Wilmington wrote in to ask, my Delmarva bill this month is over $800. I know others who are experiencing the same. What can be done about it? And I know that you have publicly called out the utility companies for these increased rates, but there are financial relief options for some lower income families, understandably so, and rightfully so, but middle income people are also struggling with this. So are there other relief programs to help people get out from under these high utility bills?
Great. So first of all, we got to stop playing left-right politics with energy. What you're seeing now, the bills you're seeing, are seen in many states and communities across our country. And I believe the basic problem is that it takes years to develop energy projects. It takes years to build new generation, whether it's gas, coal, nuclear, wind, solar, and each when it's a Democratic administration, Democratic governor, Republican president, everybody's or vice versa, everybody's kind of blocking each other from building. And so my view is we need to build energy. There's a 1.7 gigawatt offshore wind project right now that's in the pipeline. The federal government today could enable that project to move forward. That would have a dramatic positive impact. We're also holding Delmarva accountable. It is not acceptable that Delawareans, including in my own home, we're not changing our usage. Our usage is not going up. Actually, ours is going down a little bit, but our price, our bills, no matter what, keep going up. And in addition, we're holding PJM accountable. We're part of a 13-state consortium where, for the sake of resiliency, so that, you know, if one state is low on power, another state doesn't have, you know, that we all work together. That sets, there's a pricing mechanism there and has prevented new generation from coming on the grid, particularly solar generation. We're working hard to make sure PJM is held accountable. One last thing about the Energy Delaware Fund. If you go to energizedelaware.org, you can learn more about an energy fund that could help you with your bill. Now, most people are like, I'm not destitute. I'm not in poverty. Those programs aren't for me. But actually, the program was built so that even families making over $100,000 a year, you may still qualify. So go to energizedelaware.org.
So in the meantime, though, what could you tell someone like Adam who has to pay that under $800? I mean, is this the new norm for the time being?
Well, we're fighting like crazy to hold Delmarva's feet to the fire. What Delmarva has an incentive to build, overbuild transmission lines. The more transmission they build, the more profit they get. They have a profit margin. Their return on equity is about 9.5%. Mm-hmm. That benefits predominantly out-of-state shareholders. We're going to be fighting hard, and you're going to see some bills going forward. But right now, if you're looking at a bill that you cannot afford, go to energizedelaware.org. There are programs there that potentially could help you.
We have a comment that Chris D. writes, please, somebody say something about the ridiculous delivery fees that we're experiencing from Delmarva. Affording the house is one thing. Then you have to afford to heat and air condition it. Yeah, so that's a great point.
I agree 100%.
The delivery fees are more than the bill.
The delivery fee, I told Delmarva, the leadership, the delivery fee seems totally unconnected to usage. They claimed and showed me several bills that there is a connection. But yes, the delivery fees like that are totally unacceptable.
Okay. Wow, that was I mean, personally speaking, also struggling with the electric bill and the delivery fees in our house. We are going to go to our, we have a rapid fire sort of question, listener question roundup. So that's what we're calling it, our listener question roundup. I want to get to as many of these as we can. So we do want to try to limit the answers to about a minute or so from you, Governor. The first one, listener question one, listener in Greenwood asks, why don't they bring back senior school property tax credit for seniors living in Delaware to 3 years? There's a lot of concern about the homeless and people that can't afford rent at the high prices, but what about the senior citizens? And I guess he's referencing that credit that expired in 17 and kind of changed the guidelines. Used to be you only had to live in Delaware for 3 years. Now you have to live here for 10. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming this listener is kind of in that 10-year gap, right? Is that something you've considered or are considering?
We've looked at it. We got to make sure anytime you do that, it decreases funding for the schools. And where are we going to make up the funding? So it's certainly each year we look at potentially shortening residency requirements and things of that sort. We don't want people coming for a very short period of time being able to reap the gains of similar to seniors that have lived here their whole life.
Okay, so not really on the radar.
Yeah, we've already presented our budget. It's not on the radar. We're willing to look at it going forward.
Okay. Another question. Someone from Limestone Gardens writes, 18 states have blocked use of SNAP benefits for unhealthy foods. Delaware has not. Taxpayers are providing SNAP benefits to allow those families to buy sugar-rich food and drinks. And then taxpayers are again paying for their health care through Medicaid. Why does Delaware continue to allow the use of SNAP benefits to purchase unhealthy foods?
Yeah, it's a great question. There are a number of state legislators who strongly disagree with the questioner. I don't necessarily disagree with the questioner, but I think that that what some people say is that in poorer communities across our state, there is not the availability of healthy foods. So taking away SNAP benefits like that would literally starve certain people. I don't necessarily agree with that argument, but if you believe that way, I encourage you to reach out to my office, reach out to your state representative, state senator. If there's enough support in the state legislature, I will move forward.
Okay. If we're facing a structural deficit estimated at $400 million over the next 3 years, why are we spending over $20 million on a parking garage at Legg Hall? Guess they need a place to park the BMWs and stuff?
Yeah. We're not facing a structural deficit of $400 million. What happened is in House Resolution 1, which the federal government passed last year, there were several tax cuts that they don't have to pay for. Our national debt increased, I think, by over $2 trillion in Mr. Trump's first year in office because they're reducing their revenue without equally reducing expenses. Here in Delaware, we can't do that same thing. So we took some of what was in House Resolution 1 and rolled back some of the cuts, almost all to out-of-state companies. In terms of legislative parking lot, that was a proposal that was passed and approved before I came into office.
Okay. Haley from Wilmington asks, how will the governor's office combat possible voter intimidation, ICE presence at polling stations during this year's midterm elections?
I had a meeting with our election commissioner this morning. We will be prepared. There is no reason why any federal agents or federal officers should be anywhere near a polling place in Delaware this year or any year.
We're getting tons and tons of emails, comments about data centers. Joe from Newcastle asks, can we prevent data centers from being built in Delaware? Tyler from Townsend wants to know what's being done about huge data center projects that have the potential to make residents' electric bills even worse. Ron from Ellesmere emailed to say simply, he literally just wrote AI data centers, period. Can you respond to these concerns?
Yeah, data centers, as I've repeatedly said, cannot increase your energy bill by a single dollar. If any employer comes in here, the goal is to reduce costs to you, potentially provide power. In addition to power, there's a serious water usage issue. It also should not create a shortage of water or put our plentiful water resources at risk. We're standing ground. Our DENREC, Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control, issued a ruling that denied Project Washington, which is a large data center project, the ability to build in our coastal zone. We're carrying on the legacy of the great Governor Russell Peterson to say, no, you can't just set up over 500 diesel generators in our beautiful, pristine coastal zone.
Okay, last but not least, in your recent State of the State address, you made a case for a film tax credit program in Delaware, and you brought up actress Aubrey Plaza, who's a Delaware native, and you suggested a season of White Lotus in Rehoboth Beach. Have you talked to Ms. Plaza about this?
I actually have not talked to Ms. Plaza about it. We're waiting until we need the House and the Senate to pass the tax credit. I have had outreach to at least one producer who's produced major Hollywood movies, and a few other people adjacent to, you know, who are working with people with producers who seem very interested in doing something in Delaware. Delaware is perfect. We have pretty much everything, beaches, beautiful rolling hills, cities, towns, small, beautiful towns, farmland. The one thing we don't have is a ski slope, but since I announced the film tax credit, the Lord above has tried hard to change that.
We need something with Aubrey Plaza and Ryan Phillippe. Just get
I'll
and Elena Deladon. Throw her in too,
I'll
right?
Do what I can.
Okay, we're going to leave it there. It's been a lively discussion. So thank you to all our audience members who participated. Governor Matt Meyer of Delaware, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you, Shirley. Thanks, Sarah. Thank you, Benta.
Thank you also to Delaware Public Media's Benta Boutier and WHYY News reporter Sarah Mueller.
Thank you.
Ask Governor Meyer is produced by Hazel May Bryan, Tina Kalake, and Adam Staniszewski are our technical engineers. Thank you to WHYY's Johnny Perez Gonzalez and to Delaware Public Media's Tom Byrne, Thomas Terry, and Tom Interante. Kevin McCory is our executive producer. WHYY's news director is Mark Eichmann. Joan Isabella is our audio general manager. I'm Shirley Min. Thank you so much for joining us.